hub if you'd like to follow along. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob's family line. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made him an ornate robe. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field, when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dreams and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, and his father kept the matter in mind. Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem, and Israel said to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them." "Very well," he replied. So he said to him, "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me." Then he sent him off to the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and asked him, "What are you looking for?" He replied, "I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they are grazing their flocks?" "They have moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached him, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes the dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into this cistern here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. The cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy isn't here. Where can I turn now?" Then they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in his blood. They took the ornate robe back to his father and said, "We found this. Examine it to see whether it is your son's robe." He recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "No," he said, "I will continue to mourn until I join my son in the grave." So his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. Questions before we start, for Dave. What's your full name?
My full name is David Lewis. Very plain, yes, I know. Yep.
And what's your role here at Credo?
My role here is I'm a senior staff worker for the business faculty. So the little campus down at the bottom end of town near the entertainment centre, or formerly the entertainment centre. And I'm actually, my official title is the Assistant Campus Director. So that sounds pretty official, but that's what it is. That's what it is, yep.
Your favourite cafe that you found over here?
Favourite cafe would be, there's a cafe in Marrickville called West Juliet. It's pretty cool. But if it was around UTS, probably Mecca. So if you like Mecca, you probably see me there. Mecca? It's on the corner of Harris and Ultimo Streets.
And last question, how would someone be able to ask you a question if they had one?
Yeah. That is a great question. You can ask me a question in several ways. You can email me. You can text me. You can catch me after this public talk just outside here or in this room. Or you can fill in your talkback form. So you should have got one of these. Pull this out if you don't know what I'm talking about. That's there. Yeah. Put your name on it. Put your phone number. I think phone number is always the best way to go rather than emails. Otherwise, I'll just stalk you on Facebook. And write your question, hopefully legibly, please. That'd be really nice. And you can also use the back of the sheet as well. That'd be really nice for me.
Well, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. It's really good to be up here again at Public Talk. I hope you're enjoying the series, the theme, Wise Living, for this semester or trimester. Keep your zines open. A couple of housekeeping, keep your zines open. I want to also encourage you to get a pen. You have a pen? You're a uni student? Grab a pen. Because I want you to... I don't know if you noticed, but people graffiti in these. I really love reading other people's graffiti. So if you draw pictures, do that. If you underline things, do that. If you, you know, want to write me a message in it and I'll hopefully find it in the stack later, please do that too. And, yeah, talk back forms. Yeah, yeah? Cool. I'll just get myself organised.
If anyone would like pen, please.
Yeah, pen. Or you haven't got a zine, please raise your hand. Okay. So, we're starting a series, Growing the Wisdom Through Failure. And so, that was a good question, wasn't it? Is it ever a good thing to fail at something? Is it ever a good thing to fail at something? You know, in an exam, or, you know, whether you're trying to qualify for a sports team, or even securing a part-time job, or a full-time job, or an internship. You know, is it ever good to fail at those things? When I was studying here at UTS, I was an electrical engineering student, yay to the engineers, and there's a subject called signals and systems. Does anyone know that subject, signals and systems? It's a really, like, hard subject, okay? It's probably equivalent to, like, I don't know, accounting five or something, I don't know. But I had to sit this subject three times, okay? Because I failed to get a 50p in this subject more than once. So, you know, one more fail, and I would have been suspended from the university. That's pretty serious, isn't it? Okay, 3 fails in a row, suspended from university. So the subject actually has an approximate pass rate, first time pass rate, of around about 30%. That's pretty low, right? 30% pass rate. So the majority of people were failing this subject. UTSU magazine recently published an article here called Learning How to Fail, okay? And the summary of this article can be summarised with this one quote. It says, if we want to better prepare our students for the workforce, we need to create more space for safe failure. We need to help students practice seeking failure when it helps and to better avoid it when it doesn't. Yeah, this is UTS's UTS article, a student's PhD, okay, which is the studying of whether it is wise to become more successful in being more wiser to fail. Are we willing to fail and learn from our mistakes? But the thing is, where can the line be drawn on where failure doesn't become safe anymore? Where can the line be drawn about where failure doesn't become safe anymore? You know, how was for me failing a subject, signals and systems, 2 times, almost a 3rd time, going to help me in life, going to help me succeed in the workforce? Because, you know, all I could see was I was racking up a bigger hex debt and it's making my degree even longer. You know, engineering degrees are 5 years. You know, why would I want to be here even longer than that? In this series, Growing in Wisdom Through Failure, you know, it contributes to the bigger theme of wise living that we've been learning about this study session. And so we're particularly going to be looking at, as we read in this story, about Joseph's story. and Joseph as a person. You know, he struggles in life, in making mistakes and failing, but also we see how he learns a few things from his failings. And so the bigger thing we're going to be seeing through Joseph's story is how God is working behind the scenes in this man's life despite all the failings that he had. And so from this story, as we read in Genesis, Joseph, he starts as the most loved, the most adorned son, to then becoming the most despised and rejected person by his brothers and his father. And how does a young man like this, who starts a story, you know, with his whole life ahead of him at the age of 17, who is, you know, one who would be the heir to Jacob, his father, to all his wealth, who was the pride and joy of his father, to then becoming a man who is turned on against by his brothers, is sold into slavery for money, and is transported from the safety of his own home country to a foreign land. How does this happen to this kind of person? Now, surely Joseph has done something really, really bad. He's obviously failed royally. Now, would you say that this is an example for safe space for failure? You know, for the purpose of becoming more wiser in life, to the point where your life is even threatened? Or is Joseph's failure here in this story trying to show us that there is something bigger going on, a bigger picture, a bigger plan behind his failings? And I want to suggest it's the latter, okay? That this isn't just an exercise of becoming a wiser person through safe failing. I want to highlight that despite Joseph's failings and the way he speaks to his family, God is still actively working in his life for a bigger plan, and that God is even working in our lives today through our own failings. So to help us to understand Joseph's decline, we need to actually understand who Joseph was first. So there are two areas I want to say about Joseph's identity, or who Joseph was. The first thing is about his position in his family, his position. And the second is about his future ruling authority over his family. So firstly, Joseph has had a high and important position in his family. And it's a big and wealthy family, okay? Joseph's father, Jacob, is in the business of farming. Okay, it doesn't seem lucrative, but in that day, in ancient world, it was. And he had cattle, sheep, donkeys, and goats. So it's, you know, it's all going very well for him. You know, in the ancient world, animals are like assets. Okay, like for us, like our cars or stocks or houses. These are assets for us, and for the ancient world, assets are animals. And so Joseph is also part of a very big family as well. You know, his father, Jacob, you know, he's a bit raucous. He had four wives. And so Jacob is the father of 12 sons. Joseph is not only one of the oldest out of his brothers, but he's potentially the rightful heir to his father's wealth when he dies. And so Joseph, at the age of 17, is working for his father along with his brothers. And it says in verse 2, checking your zines here, in verse 2, that he's tending sheep with his father's sons of Jacob's third and fourth wives. So he's obviously committed to working with his father, okay, in his business. And in verse 3, his father tells him to meet his brothers near a place called Shechem. And so when Joseph eventually finds his brothers where they are, he's travelled over 100 kilometres to meet them, all done by foot. So that's pretty committed, right? He's a pretty hard worker. He's committed to his father's business and doing whatever his father told him to do. But also, Joseph was also quick to bring a bad report about his brothers when they weren't doing a good job as well. And the fact that he believed that he was the one to dob in his brothers shows his position of authority, a position of influence in his family. But another thing we learn about Joseph is Joseph is also the favourite of Jacob's, one of Jacob's sons. Okay, he's the favourite. You know, if you thought men couldn't do any craft or you know, any kind of knitting or making stuff with their hands as an expression of love, well, this is the perfect example. Okay, so in verse 3, Jacob handmade him, his son Joseph, a robe of many colours, an ornate robe. You know, put aside fashion and all that kind of stuff. You know, this long, flowing garment of beautiful, ornate colours and whatever, design, not only reflects how much Jacob loved his son, but how much of high regard he had for him in his family. You could say that the robe highlights the respect that he had for Joseph and the status he has in his family. Now, is anyone here have any siblings? Any siblings, brothers and sisters? I don't have any siblings, okay, but yep. Now, keep your hand up if you're the favourite. That's a lot of you. That's all of you here. That's great. You're all favourites, right? You know, it's pretty cool, right? If you're a favourite, right? What's good about being a favourite? You have a lot of power and influence, don't you? You have a lot of sway, don't you, in your family? So someone's laughing there. No, I don't. But, you know, you always get the cooler stuff, don't you? You know, but if you're not the favourite, then you always feel like, you know, you're kind of second best. You know, whatever you do, whatever you say, you know, it doesn't feel like it's good enough. You always, you know, get the sloppy seconds, you know, the rubbish bits, you know? So you're always kind of competing for that favourite spot with your brother or with your sister. And so knowing that Joseph, he has the kind of the top position in the family, and he's also the favourite, he has a lot of power, doesn't he? He's the oldest. He's the heir to his father's estate, okay? And he knows that his father loves him the most out of all the other sons, all the other 11 sons that he has, because he gives him a robe to prove it. He's the favourite in the family. And so Joseph, he doesn't deserve any of this status, any of this stuff. He doesn't do anything amazing. You know, he doesn't do anything amazing to deserve this robe. But take a look at verse 4 in your zine here, verse 4, about what it says about what his brothers think of him. Verse 4, it says, "When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him." You know, so Joseph has kind of created a lot of opposition against himself, hasn't he? The second thing we learn about Joseph is that he will have a future ruling authority over his brothers and his parents. And we learn about this from his dreams. You see, the first dream in verse 7, which is about this harvest, right? This dream about this harvest of sheaves of grain. And his brother's sheaves of wheat were bearing down to his sheaf of wheat. The second dream in verse 9, check it out on your zine again. Second dream, verse 9, is similar, where the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bearing down to him. Now, it's difficult to interpret these dreams clearly without any explanations given about each of the components of the dream. But the brothers and the father, Jacob, have obviously understood something about the dreams that makes them rise up against Joseph. Because we can see their reactions in verses 8 and 10, that they feel threatened by Joseph. They feel threatened that their brother or their son will be someone who potentially rule over them and have some kind of authority over them. So for Joseph to tell his father that he and his mum are going to bow down to him and submit to him, that's a bit rude, isn't it? That's a bit rude, don't you think? That's why Jacob rebukes Joseph. It's like, you know, my son, Reuben, he's my son, telling me in the future, most likely when I'm, you know, 80-something years old, that, you know, he'll be telling me what to do in my life, and I have to do what he says. Even though I'm right now, he's only 7 months, I'm teaching him everything in life right now. You know, and he's going to tell me, oh, you have to listen to me. Really? It sounds offensive, doesn't it? But this is the content of the dream that Joseph had. This is the person he will be. From his dreams, Joseph is somebody that'll have some kind of ruling authority over his brothers and his parents. And we should remember that these two attributes of Joseph that we just talked about just then, describe Joseph, are all given to him by God. You see, Joseph didn't have to earn his position in his family or create these amazing dreams that he had in his mind or which will eventually come true or, you know, or have this job to go to. You know, they've all been provided for him by God, who has preserved all his forefathers, from Adam, then to Noah, then to Abraham, then to Isaac, and then to his father Jacob. And then Joseph, being in this family line, it's now his turn to be provided for, particularly by God. Each forefather has had to pay it forward to their son. Joseph will have a part to play in God's plan to pay it forward to the future generations. So we need to remember to frame these qualities of Joseph, that these qualities that he possesses, are only possible because God has allowed him to have them. And so if Joseph is a person who is important in his big and wealthy family and will have a future ruling authority over his brothers and his parents, what does he do to fail so badly in life? What does he do? And I think the main reason for his failure, which leads to his decline, is in the way that he speaks to his brothers and his father. So the picture we have of Joseph is that he's the favourite, potential heir to his father's wealth. He's already, you know, miles ahead of his 11 other brothers on the awesomeness kind of scale. If you wanted to get his brothers to be his brothers, to care for him, to be loved by them, rather than his enemies, you know, was it wise of Joseph that he spoke a bad report about them and what they were doing in their job? That they were doing a rubbish job at tending sheep. Surely that's not that hard, is it? But obviously we're doing a very bad job. And he told his father. So perhaps he should have spoken to his brothers first and encouraged them to do a better job or get them to confess their wrongdoings to their father first. In the same vein, Joseph had a dream about, you know, his brother's sheaves of grain bowing down to his sheaf of grain, which meant that his brothers would have to bow down to him. You know, if his brothers already hated him and they showed it to him by not talking to him, was it wise of Joseph for them to speak about his dream without thinking through what it meant for his brothers? You know, to prove that Joseph didn't get the hint the first time that his brothers hated him even more for sharing another dream, the second dream. Does he not get the hint? You know, it makes them even more jealous of him that his parents will bow down to Joseph. You know, how much more could Joseph fail to get the approval of his brothers and not get the hint that they don't like him? Yeah, how can the way that we speak bring about failure in our lives? Particularly thinking about your position in life. You know, you might be a superior person, you might have a high position, a place of influence, just like Joseph was in his family. Or you know that you're the favourite in your network of friends or family. But is it always wise to exert the power of your position? What are your motives when we exert the power of our position, of our influence? Is it only because we want to make ourselves look better? Or is it to help others, particularly if living for Jesus is at the centre of your life? You know, in recent times, we've seen people exert a lot of power, a lot of people in public, and it's probably done more damage than good, right? So perhaps, you know, the example would be there was someone who works as a deputy mayor for a council, a particular council, and they want to say loudly that they're going to have Australia's best wedding, and to announce the love of their bride, of course. And so they use their position to block, you know, all the major roads in a suburb so that their wedding car and their 50 other wedding cars can have a wedding procession down you know, the main streets of this suburb, just so they can show everyone that they've got Australia's best wedding. Or perhaps in another example, there's someone who works for the Australian government and they need to get to a function. And so they decide instead of using a car that's been provided for them, to travel 80 kilometres to that function, they just say their name, they say their position, and they use their power to instead arrive in a helicopter to that function, which ends up costing $5,000, but gives them the maximum convenience. You see, these people, you know, they understand their position and much power they have, and they exert their power, through what they say, which then translates to actions, which then attracts a lot of public attention, a lot of public criticism, a lot of negative attention. And this leads to their public downfall. And this is the same for Joseph. It leads to his downfall. Have a look at here in verses 19 and 20 at the attitude of Joseph's brothers. This is when Joseph was sent by Jacob to try and find them. Verses 19 and 20, it says here, 19 and 20, here comes that dreamer, they said to each other. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. This isn't just sibling rivalry, guys. Okay? All the brothers want to do is eliminate him. And it comes from a place where they think their brother is bigoted. And they want to tell him where to go. And so verse 23, they strip him of this beautiful robe. They threw him into the water cistern that was bone dry. It's probably too deep to climb out of on his own, with no water, no protective clothing. He'd be sure to die if he was left out there in the cistern. But Judah, you see, Judah, one of his brothers, comes up with a better idea. He says, he comes up with the idea to sell him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels in order to make some quick money. And then they trick their father into believing that Joseph is ripped apart by animals. But really, Joseph has been deported to Egypt, which is a foreign land where he doesn't know anybody. And now he's a slave. He doesn't know how he'll be treated or what kind of work he'll do. But he's been stripped of all his power and all of his influence. You know, Joseph has failed royally, hasn't he? Because he spoke poorly to his brothers and to his father. But how does God work through Joseph's failings? One way we can look at this is through his brother Reuben. You know, despite Joseph's brothers being so keen to see him dead, Reuben convinced his brothers to not kill him, but just throw him in the cistern. And that way, Reuben could save Joseph a bit later on. But by the time he comes back to rescue Joseph, he'd been already sold as a slave. But the fact that the plan was originally for Joseph to be killed, and then somehow it was amazingly changed to the result of being sold as a slave and being sent to Egypt alive, it shows us that God was working through the situation to grow Joseph through his failings, which will eventually fulfill God's plans for the world. And God works through his brother Reuben in this story to preserve Joseph's life. And so through the failings of people, we see God working behind the scenes to fulfill his plans of preserving people. And we see plenty of similarities with this story and Jesus' story. You know, both Joseph and Jesus are betrayed by the ones that are closest to him, their dearest friends. Both Jesus and Joseph, their father's love is adorned on them. They're dearly loved by their father. And their father mourns the loss of their sons. I think the most striking component between Joseph and Jesus is when Joseph is stripped of this beautiful robe, which represented his position of power. Jesus was also stripped of his high position, his honour, to only be humiliated and degraded on the cross. But the difference is that Jesus, he didn't fail in life, but he does this because humanity had failed God. And so both of these sons play an important part of God's bigger plan for his people. One man, Joseph, to preserve his family, and the other man, Jesus, to preserve humanity. So as we progress through Joseph's story in this series, for the next couple of weeks in public talk, I hope to get to discover how God works amazingly through Joseph's life to preserve his people, Israel, and that you pick up the parallels with Joseph and Jesus. But for now, we see that Joseph has failed in the way that he speaks. And that he was so close to being killed, but God is working by the scenes to preserve Joseph's life, to fulfill a bigger plan of preserving his people, which we'll see in a few weeks. So from today's passage, how does Joseph's failings help you become aware of your position in life? And how are you to use your position of power or influence well, particularly in the way that you speak? You know, you might have the qualities that Joseph possessed. You know, that he was an important person. He had an important position, an important place in the family. And that he would have future ruling authority over people, particularly over his own family. How does Joseph's experience here help you in your interactions with other people? Particularly if these qualities or attributes have been given to you freely by God. Because we see that there are consequences for the way we exert our position of power and influence. We just read how Joseph failed, which almost ends up for him losing his life, isn't it? Because of the way he speaks about to his family about his dreams. You know, if God is working continually in our world now, giving people different attributes and qualities and positions in life, how aware are you of your position in your social circles, in your classes, in your group assignments, in your family? What are your motives when you influence people, particularly if Jesus is at the centre of your life? Because sometimes things don't always go to the way that we've planned it, right? We don't exactly plan to fail, do we? You know, so despite failing, God is still working through our failings to bring about his plans for the world. And so I think the first step to kind of grow wiser in life is not to have small safe failures, but we need to actually first consider what God says about how we should live our lives. And this is so true in the way that we speak towards others, where we should carefully consider the consequences, whether good or bad, in what we say. You know, we need to be discerning with our words. You know, we need to be sensitive to others who don't have the same perspective. You know, maybe not even speaking about things straight away, but choosing a more appropriate time to speak. But also, we don't want to fall into the trap of playing a game of power play with people. You know, you might be in a position of power. It's easy to say things that make people feel threatened, make people feel small. And so we need to pick the right time to speak, because it can cause people to rise up against you, just like it happened with Joseph. You know, we need to have humility in the position we have and in the words we use. You know, but if you fail with our words, despite us trying to seek out God, we should keep in mind that God is continually working through our lives today to bring out his plans. You know, it could be something as trivial as failing a subject, but something as serious as destroying a friendship in the way you speak. But God, he can work amazingly in both you and in your situation to bring out his plans, just as we'll see in Joseph's life over the next few weeks. And so despite Joseph's failings in the way that he speaks, God was still actively working in his life for a bigger plan, and God is still working today in our lives through our own failings.
I'm just going to have prayer now.